Welcome back to the London Futurist podcast. Should the pace of research into advanced artificial intelligence be slowed down, or perhaps even paused completely? Dear listener, your answer to that question probably depends on your answers to a number of other questions. Is advanced artificial intelligence reaching the point where it could result in catastrophic damage? Is a slowdown desirable, given that AI can also lead to lots of very positive outcomes, including tools to guard against the worst excesses of other applications of AI? And even if a slowdown is desirable, is it practical? Our guest in this episode is Professor Pedro Domingos of the University of Washington. He is perhaps best known for his book, The Master Algorithm: How the Quest for the Ultimate Learning Machine Will Remake Our World. That book takes an approach to the future of AI that is significantly different from what you can read in many other books and articles. It describes five different tribes of AI researchers, each with their own paradigms, and it suggests that true progress towards human-level general intelligence will depend on a unification of these different approaches. In other words, we won't reach AGI just by scaling up deep learning approaches or even by adding in features from logical reasoning. Pedro, welcome to London Futurists.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Pedro.
Pedro, do you still envision a unification of the five different paradigms you described in your book? Or have your ideas changed in recent times, for example, due to the performance of generative pre-trained transformers, also known as GPTs?
I think unification of the five paradigms is more necessary than ever. And in fact, what's been happening lately is actually a beautiful illustration of that. The recent progress has been in deep learning. ChatGPT and the like are mostly based on deep learning, and we can see on a very large canvas the strengths and the weaknesses of deep learning. It can learn on a very large scale, and it can also just make stuff up in a way that, for example, symbolic learning wouldn't, because it actually knows how to reason. Reasoning for deep learning is a very difficult question. For symbolic learning, it's what people have been doing from day one. And similarly, for some of the strengths and the problems that the other approaches can solve. So I think it is very necessary. I don't think it's enough, right? I think even after we've unified the five paradigms, we'll need more. Having said all that, it's also possible to think, and some people do, that deep learning is on a roll and it's a straight shot from here to AGI. I'm skeptical of that notion for these reasons and others. I could see, however, something that in some ways is already happening is that people start tacking on things from other paradigms to deep learning, and at the end of the day, what you have is very much a hybrid system, but the public perception and the claims are still that deep learning has succeeded. So you have to take what you hear with a grain of salt.
And what are the other paradigms beyond the deep learning and beyond the logical symbolic reasoning?
The other main three are genetic algorithms, which is machine learning by copying evolution, in essence. Deep learning is copying the brain at some level, and evolutionary learning is saying, well, evolution is the greatest learning algorithm of all, so let's just simulate it on the computer, except that instead of evolving plants and animals, we evolve programs and robots and circuits and whatnot. Another one is Bayesian learning, or more generally statistical learning, and the idea there is that doing machine learning inspired by biology like deep learning and evolutionary learning is a bad idea because, you know, evolution is random and biology is full of crap. So we should do it from first principles, and the most important such principle for the Bayesians at least is Bayes' theorem. It's this theorem about how you have prior probabilities before you see the data, and then you update them as you see more data, and that gives you your posterior, and that's essentially what you'd make decisions based on. And finally, the fifth one is analogical reasoning, which has foundations in psychology. Human beings seem to do this a lot, where when you have a new problem to solve, you retrieve from memory similar problems in your experience, and then you transfer parts of the solution and combine them. So these are the five main ones, of course. This is an oversimplification of the field, but I think it captures the essence.
That sounds quite comprehensive, but you were saying earlier you think that even if all five were unified, we might still not reach human-level artificial general intelligence. Why do you say that, and what do you think might else be needed?
When I look at what each of these paradigms can do, even trying to imagine what it can do by continuing along its path for a decade or more, and I compare it with what humans can do. Humans can still do some things that seem like magic from the point of view of AI. To give you not just an example, but an important case, we can generalize much farther from the examples we see than any of these paradigms. You show a little girl a picture of a horse, and she can recognize horses for life, including horses that look incredibly different from the one that she saw in the picture. We don't know how to do that in AI today, and I think that's a really big problem, and it'd probably call for fundamentally new ideas. And again, if you look at other fields, it's common when a new field appears as it's growing up for it to start by borrowing ideas from other fields. And that is very much what we've been doing in AI, from neuroscience, from evolution, from statistics, from psychology, from philosophy. But the field is only mature once it has developed its own ideas. And I think AI is still in its early stages of doing this, also because it's a young field.
You say it's a young field. What does that imply for your estimate of timescales until we do reach human-level artificial general intelligence? Is that centuries away, decades away, or perhaps sooner?
It's hard to say. Anybody who gives you a firm prediction is probably hallucinating or making stuff up, so be suspicious. What I usually say when I'm forced to give an answer is that it will take maybe 100 years, give or take an order of magnitude. The standard deviation is on a log scale, sorry, I fell into jargon there. But my point is that it could be as soon as 10 years from now. For all I know, there's a kid in the garage right now inventing the master algorithm, and again, that's part of why I wrote the book, to help that happen. Or maybe somebody already has an answer, and like some deep learning people think backprop is the answer. At the other extreme, there's people who say, with reasons that we can't ignore, that it's just not going to happen. It's too hard, for example. The reason it's hard to predict is that progress in science is not linear. We have these periods of rapid progress, which of course we're in the middle of one right now in AI, and then we also have these plateaus where for a long time nothing much happens, and it's very hard to predict how long those plateaus will be or at what height the next plateau will be. As a technologist, I like Alan Kay's dictum that the best way to predict the future is to invent it. How long it takes is not set by a law of nature. It depends entirely on our creativity. It could be soon, it could take a long time. One good thing about what's happening in AI right now is that at this point it's so clear that the economic value is immense. And there are so many people doing research that as long as we don't all funnel into the same local optimum, there will be a lot of ideas. Unfortunately, we do seem to all be funneling into the same local optimum, so I'm trying to combat that as much as I can.
On your example of generalizing from just one example, I have read that some of the new foundation models seem to have a one-shot generalization capability. Is that hype or is there something in that?
I'm glad you brought that up. You have to understand what it is that they are and are not doing. The problem that I mentioned is, of course, a well-recognized problem, and there's a lot of approaches to it. One of which is few shot, or even one shot, or zero shot learning, where what happens is you pre-train on a very large corpus, for example, of language. This is how all these ChatGPT-like models work. And then, based on that, you've learned something about language that you can now use to do various tasks with many fewer examples, ideally, even zero. So it's not that you're generalizing from no examples, you're actually generalizing from billions or trillions of examples. It's just that you're using them for something different than what they originally created for. Now, it's still remarkable that this can be done as well as it is. You have to remember that what we're doing in this process, and we can't do it indefinitely, is that we are covering up for our lack of generalization by having massive amounts of data. It's like a Swiss cheese, and we're making holes in the Swiss cheese, and we have trillions of holes, but the Swiss cheese is in trillions of dimensions, so it's almost all still cheese. We can do things that look like great generalization, but in fact, they don't. And this is also where you see the hallucinations, the adversarial examples. Once you move a little bit out of that comfort zone of the system, it just falls flat very badly.
Petr, you're volubly not very happy with the open letter from the Future of Life Institute. You've been tweeting very entertaining little snippets of criticism. Would you like to tell us why you're against this idea of a six-month moratorium in improving large language models?
Honestly, I don't know where to begin. I think that letter is just a joke from beginning to end. And sorry to be so direct and so emphatic. I don't know if we could cover in the time that we have all the mistakes, some of them ludicrous, that that letter is making. But let me just try to touch on a few of them. First of all, we are nowhere near AGI. We can debate the ins and outs of this, but I think the level of alarm and urgency of the letter, as if doing something in the next 6 months will make a big difference, is just ridiculous. Now, I can understand people who don't know anything about AI, lay people, anthropomorphize it and so on, having some of those alarms, but the letter was signed by a bunch of fairly respectable people, and that's what really disappoints me. Now, next point, they bring up a whole bunch of dangers of AI, that it'll be the jobs apocalypse, that it's going to swamp us with misinformation, that it's going to, I forget the exact terms, we are at risk of losing control of our civilization to these machines. We need to distinguish between what might happen in the long run as AI gets better and what will happen in this next 6 months. We're not at risk of losing control of our civilization to AI in the next 6 months. And then the solutions that they recommend, which are really the reason for the moratorium, you have to laugh. It's like, we're going to have some kind of committee of experts and regulators that in 6 months is going to create the framework. And then they have this language that we shouldn't continue until AI is safe beyond a reasonable doubt and we'll convene, you know, some regulators on what to do that. Like, what are you talking about? In 50 years of internet, we haven't done that for the internet. If we did that for any technology at all, we'd still be living in caves. This is ridiculous. Not to mention that, of course, regulation has a whole slew of downsides that we know very well from many other directions, which opinions on it can vary, but they should at least acknowledge that. And it goes on, but you get the idea.
You make very telling points. But the heart of it seems to me to be the belief that you have, and an awful lot of other people in the AI community have, that we're nowhere near AGI. But you yourself said that it could be 10 years away. Jeff Hinton said it could be 5 years away. We just don't know. Now, if it is possible, and if it is possible with AGI and superintelligence could be seriously harmful, then sounding an alarm bell doesn't seem like such a daft idea. And actually, one thing I slightly worry about is I understand the three points of view that seem to exist in this landscape. There's the carry on as we are, Jan LeCun, yourself and many others. There's pause, the FLI open letter, and yikes, put a hard stop on, go backwards, the Eliezer Yudkowsky position. I think all three groups are full of really smart, really well-intentioned people. And I regret, and I don't accuse you of this because I think you've been funny rather than vituperative or abusive, but I do regret the level of animosity that this debate is being conducted in. Because if we carry on like that, then people won't understand each other. And I just think it'd be great if everybody could dial it down a bit. Do you think there's anything in that?
Oh, I agree with you on a lot of things. Let's start from the end. I do think we should tone it down a bit, which is why the letter is such a bad idea. The letter is just taking the hysteria to a new level, which is counterproductive. I have no doubt that these people, for the most part or entirely, are well-intentioned. I know many of them very well. This is not just a publicity stunt. People have an irresistible tendency to assign bad motives to others while never assigning them to themselves, even subconsciously. So my disagreement with a lot of these people, which I've had live for many years, and, you know, the issues evolve and whatnot, I think they are misperceiving a number of things, but maybe it's me. This debate very much can and should happen. And again, a large part of my goal in writing something like The Master Argument and others is to foster that debate. Next thing is, I don't think there are no risks at all. I agree, and a number of people have said this, like Sam Altman most famously recently, that, and again, this is not new, AI is an extraordinary technology, just how large the upside and the downside both are. So there are very big risks with AI. It's a very high risk, very high variance proposition, so we need all hands on deck. Everybody needs to be looking at this, not just the experts or the regulators and so on. In fact, my criticism is not that there's not enough attention being paid to this, is that it's the wrong kind of attention. and that the wrong dangers are sucking up all the oxygen while the real dangers are actually not getting the attention they deserve. My view is not, oh, let's just carry on happily and pretend that nothing is wrong. My problem with that letter is that, again, it insists on focusing on the wrong dangers and misperceiving the real ones and the solutions. People have been surprised by how acrimonious the debate has been. Partly this is just something blowing into public view that has been there for decades. These kinds of debates about AI have been going on for a while. I, for example, just to speak for myself, I have spent a large chunk of my time in the last 10 years trying to inform and educate the public and decision makers and so on about the ins and outs, what AI really is, what we should do. A letter like this is just kind of negating all of that. So forgive me for being a little unhappy at it.
So what are the dangers that you would want to draw more attention to?
Very good. There's a very important dimension in all this, which we've alluded to, which is how strong AI are we going to have, how soon? I am in the camp as an AI researcher that in the long run, we will get to human intelligence and way past it. That's the long term. And one thing that we need to think about is to think about the long term. And, you know, I agree with people like Nick Bostrom and Stuart Russell that some of us should be thinking about this now, the long term. Why not? It's such a big issue that it behooves us to be thinking about this, in particular, some of us academics and whatnot. There is a danger in doing that that they often neglect, which is my guess, consistent with other things I've just said, is that that AI in the long term that is going to surpass human intelligence is going to be so different from the AI that we have right now that trying to prepare for it based on what we know now in terms of the guardrails, the regulations, the incentives, etc., could actually lead us in the wrong direction. Now, this is not a reason to do it. It's a reason to be aware of that. And we can go into some specific examples of this. But more saliently right now is the short term. It is like, what kind of AI can we expect in the short term? Here's the big problem. In the short term, AI is still going to be very stupid. ChatGPT is this interesting thing that it has read the entire web, and often it blows your mind with things that wouldn't if you realize that it had read the entire web. But if you mistake it for a human with that level of knowledge, you will be very impressed. But in almost all the major areas where there are problems related to AI, the solution is not to stop AI. It's to make it more intelligent. The big risk in the world right now, not in the distant future, is from AIs that are too stupid, and as a result, they make stupid consequential decisions. Not just talking with ChatGPT, but about who gets loans, who gets job offers, who goes to jail, etc., etc. I realize that this is an intuitive for a lot of people, but based on my take and knowledge of AI and its current state, if you want to make AI safer, the best, most important thing you can do is to increase the intelligence. So when they call for stopping the development of AI, they're doing exactly the wrong thing, even though with the best of intentions.
But isn't this increased intelligence capable of doing two things? Yes, it can provide us with tools that are more precise. AI will be less likely to make mistakes. But equally, it will be more able, in the hands of a bad actor, to deceive us, to manipulate us, to understand all about us and know what are our hot buttons and cold buttons so that we will do things that are truly not in our own best interests.
Absolutely. The two big dangers of AI right now, or classes of dangers, I should say, are incompetent AI, which I just mentioned, and bad actors. Whatever the technology is, the bad actors will try to use it for their bad purpose, whether it's criminals, authoritarians, etc., etc. And the latter is very much a real and present danger. We should not underestimate. I think in many quarters it is still underestimated. But again, the question here is, how do we combat that? What do we do about it? And a good analogy is, you can say, oh, cars can be used by bank robbers to get away, so we should put a moratorium on the development of motor cars. This is ridiculous. What we need is for the police to have cars as well. If the police have horses but the bank robbers have cars, that's a problem. But the bank robbers are going to have cars one way or another. So what we need is the good guys to have better AI. Same with authoritarian states. China is going all the way using AI for their purposes. We'd better use it for our purposes as well. And unfortunately, democracy is behind in making the best use of AI precisely because we're so worried about all these downsides or apparent downsides and the threat of AI and whatnot. So again, In that regard, our best bet is to maximize the development and use and control of AI by the good actors so that they will prevail over the bad actors. So again, in this regard, calling for a moratorium is counterproductive.
I wanted to ask you a question about objective functions, which are, loosely speaking, the goals that an AI is pursuing. It seems to me that the heart of the disagreement between yourself and, say, Stuart Russell is a couple of things. One is you're very confident that AGI and superintelligence is quite a long way off. The other is that, as I understand it, I could be wrong, you think that we will always be able to control the objective function of an AI, and you're confident that no machine will ever either deliberately or accidentally change its objective function in a way that's really bad news for us. And you also seem to be pretty confident that no AI is, at least for a very long time, going to become sentient. Why are you so confident of those things?
Very good. Let me address your first point first, because it's also important. As I alluded to before, I don't know how long it's going to take to get to AGI, but if I put a probability distribution on it, it's not going to be that soon. It could be, but the probability of that is low enough that I don't think that prevails over other considerations. So we do need to be prepared for the full spectrum of possibilities. And we could talk about, just hypothetically, let's assume that somebody cracks the problem tomorrow. How will this play out and what should we do? We can certainly have that conversation. But now, your second point in some ways is a really important one that gets much less attention and should get more. And this is the following, because in some ways it's less obvious. It's that people anthropomorphize AI and they put into it all sorts of these intentions, desires, emotions, consciousness, you know, the will to power. And that's why they get scared of it taking over. But AI is not like that. I understand that by analogy with humans, we tend to see it that way, but we need to learn not to see it that way. ChatGPT is a great example of this. ChatGPT is a system that generates sentences. It doesn't have any of those things that would be dangerous to us, like an alien species trying to take over the Earth. And in particular, a machine learning system, which is what all these things are, and it's really what the crux of the issue is, it can learn to do things, but it's always under the control of an objective function that is set by us. And it's not going to spontaneously start doing something else, because this is an evolutionary process. Machine learning is a sped up evolutionary process that is under our control. A good analogy here might be, if you have a dog, you don't worry that the dog is going to kill you.
Depends on the dog.
People don't worry that their dogs one night are going to kill them. But dogs are just evolved wolves who did kill us. So if you don't worry about the dog killing you, why would you worry about the robot killing you? We have much, much more control over the robots, and in particular the evolution, than we do over the dogs.
Because the dog isn't evolving anything like at the speed that the AI is. And as we've seen over and over again, the AI seems to evolve in ways which surprise us.
It is true that the process is faster, but think about it from this point of view. Suppose that you were a superhuman that was going to live millions of years, and look at what happens with dogs and wolves. The analog is you'd be worrying, like, should we try to domesticate wolves, or will the wolves one day kill us? And we know now that that's almost hard to take seriously. It's the same thing now. And let me give you an even better and more germane example. Think about DNA. Imagine for a moment that strands of DNA could chat with each other. So we're two genomes talking, we're genomes of bacteria, and we're saying, like, well, things have worked out pretty well with bacteria as far as multiplying ourselves has gone. But this whole idea of eukaryotes and multicellular organisms makes me nervous. Because how do we know that we'll always be able to control them? They're going to do things that are far beyond our understanding. Here we are today, and we are still controlled by our genes. So my analogy is that our genes control us via our emotions in the same way that we control our machines via our objective functions. Again, it's not that there's nothing to worry about, but there people are vastly underestimating the degree of control that we actually have. This is an optimization problem with using machine learning. Yes, it can do unpredictable things. It can, and in fact, that's a lot of the beauty is that it can do unpredictable things. But I'm very skeptical that those unpredictable things are of the form that suddenly the robots decide to kill us instead of following the objective function. All their computational power is going to satisfying that objective function. One more thing that is also very important before we go on to this debate. Again, I understand that non-technical people don't have this background, but technical people do. AI is about solving problems that take an exponential amount of computing resources, but checking the solutions is very easy. This is the technical definition of AI, without getting into jargon. We can, by this principle, make super powerful AIs that are very well controlled by us. The technical term for this, for those who know it, is of course NP-complete problems. And that's what we're doing here. All we have to do is set up things properly, which needs some care, and check the solutions. If we create an AI to cure cancer, we want it to be as powerful as possible because curing cancer is hard. Checking that the patient is still alive is not hard. And how's the AI curing cancer program going to go on a rampage, trying to murder patients? It may by mistake kill some, but that's actually the other type of danger that I was talking about.
I've heard two rebuttals to this line of thinking. One is that evolution sometimes produces instincts and characters that is opposed to the genetic programming. Genetic programming seeks to continue passing DNA down to the next generations, but some humans have got ideas in their minds which cause them to follow chastity or birth control or poverty or whatever. So sometimes the evolved creation doesn't have its own objectives completely in alignment with what the creators of that system intended. And we can see this in, this is the second objection now, the second rebuttal, that sometimes we think a software is following a particular objective function, but we aren't completely sure. All we have is evidence that many times it seems to be behaving in line with a particular objective function, and then in some cases it doesn't. It's because there isn't that complete alignment. Now, you can say that's incompetent AI, a different kind of incompetence. I think that's right. But doesn't exist a problem there that we need to keep an eye on?
To answer your first objection, the example that you bring up is a very good one. We humans in some ways seem to have defeated our programming with birth control and things like that. But let me point out a few things to you. One is that it's taken a few billion years to get to the point where this might happen. Even if you think AI is happening 1,000 times faster, this is not a problem for today. And it remains to be seen. Maybe memes. Memes are like genes. There's this process where they are evolving. They are, right? Memes are evolving. This is Richard Dawkins' original idea, which of course is now spread to a lot of things. And I think there's a lot of truth to it. We now have a new replicator on the planet, and this is memes. They're going to follow the same logic, but potentially different from that of the original genes. So they could be at cross purposes. This could happen, but first of all, it probably won't happen very soon. And second of all, we're watching the whole time. We're not super AIs, we're just human intelligences, but there's a lot that we can do. I can even envisage the full-time job of most of humanity being doing just that, checking that the AIs are doing what they're supposed to and not going off the rails somewhere. I think that is a valid concern, but is not urgent and needs to be seen in proportion. Now, the other question, which is, software sometimes behaves not the way that you'd expect. Yes, that happens, but what you have to realize happens in machine learning as opposed to generic software is that there is an evolutionary process going on where we are continuously, whether it's by gradient descent or combinatorial search or whatever, we're continuously generating alternatives, different versions of the program or the model or whatever, and the ones that don't maximize the objective function get culled. So what you're saying is going to happen continuously, and also continuously, the ones that don't fit the objective function get pruned. The big danger, as someone like Stuart Russell has pointed out, and I agree, is the genie problem, is that the objective function is dumb. It's not that the system will fail to maximize it, it's that it should be something else. That's what we should be worrying about, and can. Because the whole point is that the objective function is simple and transparent, the optimization isn't, but we as individual decision makers, society, what we should be worrying about is the objective function, including the hard constraints. And then how the optimization naturally happens, I think mainly the engineers need to worry about that. Now there's complete confusion between these two things.
That's the King Midas problem.
Yeah.
Where the objective function was to turn everything into gold, and then he realized when his food and his daughter turned into gold that that wasn't really such a great idea.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this, and I'm running slightly the risk of annoying you, but I'm going to do it anyway. You've said that there's a great deal of uncertainty about timeline to AGI. There's a great deal of uncertainty about the way AI will unfold. I wonder what level of risk you would want there to be, the percentage chance of human extinction, what level of risk you'd want there to be before you would agree to something like the FLI letter, and what level of that risk do you think there is at the moment?
Looking at this from a finance risk return point of view, your ideal investment is one that has unlimited upside and limited downside. And I think AI very much has an unlimited upside. What's exciting about it is that it's hard to imagine how good it could get. Now, it could also get very bad if we were to just completely give up control, which we absolutely definitely should not. But the question is, how do we maintain control? We've talked some about that. And given that we do that, and ignoring the other types of dangers for just a moment, what is the level of risk that we are willing to tolerate? And I think there's a very simple baseline answer to that, which works for me. It's like the risk of getting struck by lightning. I don't worry about getting struck by lightning. It's not that it can't happen, but that some other problems are so much more likely that I'm not going to waste my time worrying about getting struck by lightning. So if the danger of us going extinct from AI is small enough compared to the other things that we should worry more about, then I'll spend my time worrying about those rather than AI making us go extinct. And I think we are in that regime. Again, we can continuously monitor this as we go forward, but for the foreseeable future, I don't think the risk of AI driving humans extinct, at least through its own self-generated evil versus bad players or accident, and even including those, the risk of us going extinct because of AI is much smaller than the risks of other things. There are these things, including prominently the Future of Life Institute, which originated this letter, that worry about the existential risks. And AI right now, I think, is way too prominent among them. There are much better things to worry about than AI driving us extinct.
So if you think the letter produced by FLI and the subsequent conversation isn't particularly good conversation, where do you think a better conversation is taking place? Where would you point our listeners to deepen their true insight as to the lie of the land?
You ask a great question, and I wish I could point you to places A, B, C, and D. The problem is that I don't see that happening, which makes me very sad. And again, I'm trying to combat that. What I see is various kinds of people, groups in society, countries, each focusing on the things that they traditionally worry about, which unfortunately, all of them are able to project onto AI. So it's like a compendium of misunderstandings. I have a talk, which maybe I should turn into an article, called The Dangers of AI, Real and Imaginary. And I can point to very large discussions of some of the imaginary dangers, some of which the letter touches on, but not others. But I really do think, as an action item, we urgently need to create a forum where we have this more rational discussion. And it has to involve technologists, AI experts, absolutely. It also has to involve sociologists, politicians, people from all walks. Part of what disappoints me about the letter is that some of these people, I hope, would be fostering the latter and not the former.
Peter, it's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you for joining us. And perhaps a way of winding up is to say that that is exactly what we are trying to do with the London Futurist podcast, create a forum for smart people with a range of different opinions to contribute to a debate and to help raise awareness, raise interest in the most important things that are happening in this most important of times for humanity. So thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Yeah, more power to you, and happy to help.
Many thanks, Pedro.